Hello and welcome to Mum's Work and Chaos. We all know the saying, it takes a village to raise a child, but where is that village? Well, I started this podcast to help you find yours, and I'm joined by some amazing guests this season, talking about subjects such as fast fashion, menopause, sex education, and teenage behaviour, just to name a few. So join me this season, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Mum's Work and Chaos. Today I am joined by the wonderful Harriet Shearsmith. You may know her on Instagram as Toby and Rue, but she already has her own podcast as well, all about unfollowing mum. So Harriet, tell us a bit more about yourself, your podcast, and why you started it.
Hi, hello, well, thank you for having me. So I, first and foremost, I'm a mum of three. And have teens and tweens myself. I started my I've been a content creator for about 10 years now, and slowly but surely I have spoken about all sorts of topics around parenthood, around life. And then a few years ago, around 4 years ago coming up, I cut contact with my mum. And I started talking about that online after about a year of working through the process and doing some healing. And I realized that actually this is such a taboo topic, but one that affects so, so many people.
Yeah.
An astounding amount of people are affected by estrangement. And there's even been studies from standalone charity who work with people who are estranged, who've unfortunately shut down now, but who have done some really great pioneering research into estrangement, cutting contact, toxic family dynamics. And they reckon that approximately one in five people are affected by estrangement. It's that big.
Yeah.
But we don't talk about it. We don't talk about it at all. And it's so shrouded in shame that I thought, well, actually, a podcast about estrangement, about cutting contact, about breaking cycles, generational trauma. I think that's needed. I think that's something that has a place that allows people to work through that process, to understand that they're not alone. And that's how the podcast came about. I'm also a qualified coach, which came about again because of estrangement. I work with adults who have cut contact or are navigating toxic family dynamics. And I have to say that's one of the my favourite ways in which my career has developed. And I'm an author as well. So I have lots of hats. Also a trainee therapist. So
amazing.
I'm working through to get into that field so that I can help more people who've had these experiences. And that's me.
Amazing. Well, something I've started talking about more recently as well on my own Instagram page is my own relationship with my dad. So it wasn't until he had his stroke a couple of weeks ago and I was describing our relationship to the nursing staff at the hospital that I realised that we were estranged. We were already low contact, so you know, texts on birthdays, Christmas, cards through the post, that sort of thing. But we'd sort of stopped talking and really meeting up when I was about 16. Then I tried to rekindle everything when I was in my early 20s, and again that sort of phased. And then, you know, we've done all the big visits to go and see him, to introduce him to the grandkids as and when they've arrived. So I'm also a mum of three. I've got a now 8-year-old as of last Friday, a 4-year-old as of last Saturday. Yes, that's right. They're 4 years and one day apart, which is a bit bonkers. And a 2-year-old. So he's now 2.5, actually. So the last time we actually went to see him was when she was just a month old.
Right.
So I hadn't physically seen him for 2.5 years before I went down to see him after the stroke. And I was really lucky. I shouldn't say lucky, really. But there was no judgment from any of them, any of the nursing staff, any of the doctors, no one.
Even the occupational therapists, speech therapists, and social workers that I've spoken to, none of them have judged my sister and I for the kind of relationship we have with him. Not because of how he is, but just because I think there's a lot more understanding now that those relationships do break down, and that it can be very difficult. But I mean, you know, I was listening to your first episode, and there were quite a few similarities between like my early childhood and yours as well that resonated with me. My parents divorced when I was six. My dad used to use like me and my sister as pawns at the beginning. When we'd go and visit him on the weekends, he'd put little notes in our bags for mum to read, and he'd say like little snide remarks as well. Like, I remember very clearly pushing the shopping trolley around Waitrose. It sounds very posh, but it was literally the only like small supermarket in Barnet, so you had this. So I remember pushing the trolley around Waitrose, and like, I mean, I was seven. You know, 7 year old is not going to push a trolley in a straight line and be able to see over the bar high enough to not hit the bumpers around the edge. But I remember very clearly whacking the bumper and him going, "Oh, you drive like your mother." And things like that. And it was like, oh, okay. And so, like, all of those sorts of things, you want to then report back. You want to say to mum, "Oh, that's a this," like, and sentence check it. But of course, then that would upset her more. So she never, like, my mum never ever said a bad word about my dad either. She always wanted us to have a relationship with him. She always encouraged us to, you know, to keep the lines of communication open. Even though she was estranged from her own mum growing up, and chose to, you know, set those boundaries and put that estrangement in place herself. She still encouraged us to try and continue to have a relationship with him. And I think also as a therapist herself, she, you know, and having lived that experience as well, knowing how hard it is from her point of view, she can understand like why we've wanted to maybe rekindle things with him and try again, and how hard it is now at the age of 36 to make that decision that actually it's not protecting me, and it's not protecting my kids. So actually, it's probably better to step away from that now. So it's hard, but you know when it's the right decision for you. So I think we're getting to that space now where we're going to go from like low to no contact. That's just a bit of background about my own experiences.
It's a really difficult area to navigate when you're kind of on that cusp of trying and being low contact, to then go, okay, no, actually, maybe now is the time that I need to step into that no contact place.
Yeah, it's a real tough one. Like, we've tried helping. It just got to the point where, like, a couple of weeks ago, he just told me to fuck off. And I was like, okay, I think you've just made the decision for me. And then came back apologising again. And I was like, there's only so many apologies you can actually take after a while. And I think I'm done with this. So we'll see where we go from here. But it seems like this has been quite the subject that's resonated with the listeners. I did post a question and answer question box up onto my Instagram stories yesterday and today, and we've had quite a few questions come in. So I was gonna start with the first one is, are there different levels of estrangement?
Yes, there are. And I think we've briefly touched on this. So with estrangement, I think people quite often hear it, and estrangement is, the word itself would mean that there is no contact, there's a complete end to the relationship. But actually, in reality, for a lot of people, there are some differences. So you might be in a low contact relationship with a parent where you have the occasional text message, you might see each other on holidays, you might see each other at special family events, but you don't particularly have a relationship with them. So it's a little bit more like an acquaintance style relationship of, I will see you occasionally, or very much kept to arm's length. That would be what we would describe a low contact relationship as. And then you have a no contact relationship, which is very much what I have, where there is, it's what it says on the box, there's no contact. I have not heard from or spoken to my mum in nearly 4 years. I have no intention for that to change. And that's necessary for me to protect myself from her and her behaviour.
It's one of those really tricky things, isn't it? Like, you know, it's hard to define as well. Like, yes, you've got those clear definitions of low and no, but equally, like, as I said I didn't even realize I was estranged until I had to describe my relationship with him. And I think, again, there's that's that real taboo around it, isn't there? But it's, as I said, like, I face no judgment from any of the nursing staff or doctors or anyone. However, when my sister and I were just like trying to describe this relationship, and they were like, oh, so you're estranged. Like Frankie said to me, she was like, oh, will that make him upset if we describe it in that way? And I was like, well, it's not about whether he's upset or not. They're the facts. We don't speak. We haven't seen each other in over 2 years. So, you know, the fact is we're estranged. And if he wants to fix that, we can work toward, you know, I'm still open to working towards that. However, you know, he shouldn't be upset by that. That's not the point. The next one I have is, how do you know when you're ready to cut ties completely?
How do you know when it's time to cut contact? Well, I think that's a really difficult one that only an individual can answer.
Yeah.
When this relationship is no longer serving you, and the only thing that it does is damage your peace, and the only thing that it does is damage you and your family, I think that's the point at which you have to start thinking to yourself, what am I getting out of this? Why am I hanging on to this relationship? Why am I staying here? Is it because of a feeling of obligation? Mm. Is it because of guilt? Is it fear? What is it? And that is actually an acronym that is really common to describe the way that we feel when we grow up in toxic family dynamics. It's called FOG, fear, obligation, and guilt. And it's the way in which our parents relate to us, what they create within us that keeps us in these toxic cycles. That sense of fear of, am I going to regret this when they're gone? Am I making a mistake here? Maybe I'm the problem. A feeling of obligation. How many of us grew up hearing, well, after everything I've done for you, how many of us grew up feeling like we owed our parents something, which we never owe our parents anything. There is no debt for simply existing, and there is no debt, no owing for them making sacrifices, even if they did make huge sacrifices. We don't owe them for that. That's the choice that they made to have children, and that's them fulfilling their responsibility to their children. So is it an obligation thing? Do you feel like you have to have this relationship? Is it guilt? Is it feeling like you're the worst person in the world? If you put yourself first and choose not to continue with this relationship because you've always been taught that putting yourself first is wrong. You've always been taught that their needs have to come first, that what they want has to come first, that they're entitled to some part of you or to be in your life, which isn't true.
Wow. Wow. So yeah, when when we went down, so our dad lives in Ramsgate. He moved from Barnet to Ramsgate because he was essentially homeless, and the council had said, okay, well, we've struck up a deal with Ramsgate, and you can move to the seaside and be happy and have a place. And so he decided to take them up on it and move. And that was his decision to move much further away from us to a place where we couldn't get to because we couldn't drive. Neither of us could drive. And equally, like, I mean, you know, you could get public transport and everything, but it's quite a way on the train and stuff. And so he'd made that decision. He chose to move away. But when we found out about the stroke and everything, I was shocked by how much it had hit me. I cried. I was like, shit. And then, like, the first thought I had in my head was, I need to go and see him, because if I don't find out, like, whether if I don't make peace with him and he dies, I'm going to regret it. And that was part of the reason why my sister and I moved heaven and earth to go and see him, was because we both got hit by this, like, oh, we must know if this if this could ever be fixed. And I definitely think that there was an obligation to be good daughters and you know, at least try and help him in his hour of need. Like, I mean, we've both been in situations, and then he's been none the wiser. Like, you know, yeah. our emergency contacts are our husbands and our mum.
Yeah.
I think even our mother-in-laws, you know, and father-in-laws would be pushed up the contact list compared to him. You know, there's no way he could get to us on time. He wouldn't be useful. He doesn't know anything. So it's like, and then we were asked, like, basic questions, like, is this how he would normally speak? Has the slurring got worse? It's like, no fucking idea. I can't give you a baseline on anything, you know. I don't actually know this person. And I think it was quite a big thing, like, the feeling of that obligation and that what if and that potential regret was what forced us down there. And it wasn't until we got down there that we were like, do we need to do this? Do we need to spend hundreds of pounds on petrol and hotels and food and clothing and stuff to do this? And I think, really, looking back at it, the answer was no. Like, there was nothing there to fix or salvage or find. And I think it really, that idea of obligation was, and being the good daughter and the good child was really what drove it. And yeah, I think coming to that realization that actually there's no obligation there at all has really helped solidify things a bit more. And I think, If you can sit there and you can say, you know, I only know him from stories that other people have told me. It's like, all my grandparents died before I was born, so I never met any of them. And I feel like I know him just as well as I know them. It's really weird to explain it that way, but that's the way I feel. Like, I know about his glory days. I know the highlights reel. And that's all I know, you know. And so it's it's one of those things. Like, I think, like you said, you know when you're ready, you know when it's time, and it's a very subjective decision to make. No one can make it for you.
Yeah.
And honestly, I feel like if I did just block his number on my phone now, I wouldn't feel that regret anymore.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's really subjective. And for some people, it might never be the right thing to be no contact completely. For some people, they might feel more comfortable, more confident, happier in a low contact relationship where they get the occasional text message. What I usually say is, I have clients who will tell me that they have this visceral reaction when they get a text message from a parent who they keep that contact because they feel they have to. And it's like, oh, I've got, you know, the message comes up, their palms feel sweaty, they feel really stressed. And to someone who is listening who doesn't have that experience of a toxic parent, that might sound outlandish, you know, what a weird reaction to that. But to other people, it might be really relatable to have that really big reaction when you recognize that a parent is contacting you and you know that it's either going to be to pick at you or they're just never going to be accountable for the way that they have behaved. And your body senses that this is some kind of danger. And that's really difficult to make your peace with. And obviously you might not be in physical danger, but our brains, our bodies do not tell the difference between what is a physical threat and what is a perceived threat. They don't know. Yeah. So we still go into that fight or flight response. We still have all of our senses activated. And the same thing occurs. We get that tummy ache. We get those sweaty hands. We get that stress response. Yeah. If you're in that place, what are you holding on to that relationship for? What is it? And a lot of people will say, oh, I'm just trying to keep the peace. I'm trying, whose peace? Because it's surely not yours.
It's not yours,
Yeah, it's not yours. And yes, it might seem like peace to toe the line, to not have to deal with siblings who would have something to say about this, to perhaps be disbelieved by other people, to realise that sometimes cutting contact has ripple effects. Mm. And you don't just lose the person that you cut contact with, but other people around it. And that's really, really hard to navigate and really sad. But it's not your responsibility to make them realize that you don't owe someone a relationship, that you don't have to stay in this place where you're being abused.
I think that's one thing. Like, we are in a way quite lucky that that there is no family, other family, that is attached to either of my parents that I'm worried about losing if we went no contact completely. You know, my dad has an older sister, and she has children, but they cut contact before I was born. My mum, through her own estrangement with her mum, which was a very toxic relationship and sounds very there are similarities between the enmeshment that you had that she had with her mum. So my mum was the youngest. She was 8 years younger than the middle sibling.
Mm-hmm.
And there were three of them. And she, essentially, her life was laid out for her.
Yeah.
She was to go to and work at Woolworths behind the checkout.
Mm-hmm.
And she was to look after her mum in her old age.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. Yeah. That was what she was born for. And my mum couldn't reconcile that. She wanted, she had her own dreams and her own life that she wanted to live. She wanted to be a teacher. She wanted to have her own children. She wanted to get married. And so my mum got married when she was 17 to my dad.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until she was 32 that I was born, because she had a really fantastic career and then went on to do even more amazing things after I was born. Honestly, she's fantastic. And I look at her and I think, wow, you were brave. You were so brave and you went out and you did that. And so she ended up losing contact with her own sister and brother because of making the choices and the decisions that she did for herself to be her own person. And so, again, we have cousins, but we're not involved in their lives. Like, there's nothing, like, we were invited to my aunt's funeral. We turned up and with my aunt's children, they're perfectly fine with us, you know, but they're a lot older than me and my sister. My aunt had children in her early 20s. And again, she was 8 years older than my mum. And so, you know, there's quite a big age gap between me and my cousins. My cousins are actually closer in age to my mum than me. And so it's so we just don't have that closeness, that bond with that any of our close family. And so I can understand why things might be difficult if you're choosing to go through an estrangement with your parent, and that's going to affect your relationship with a wider family base that you're very close to, and you might see them at events and parties and things. But you know, I don't have that, and I still struggle with the idea of completely letting go, even though I know it's the right thing to do. So if you've chosen to let go of that toxic relationship and you're anyone choosing to do this is, in my book, incredibly brave and, yeah, and just fabulous. Well done, honestly.
Thank you.
So there's another couple here. Now, this one, I've read you all of them before we came on, on there. But this one, I think, you know, we both were like, what?
Yep.
So, mm-hmm. Is there a right way to go no contact?
Mm-hmm.
I've been told afterwards that I should have given a time frame. First of all, I'd like to know who told you that?
Mm-hmm.
Who told mm-hmm. you there should be a time frame?
And you were like, what? And I was like, that doesn't surprise me even remotely. You would only have to read the comment sections on the Unfollowing Mum Instagram page to see that the sense of entitlement is wild, and that you
incredible.
Can, until you are blue in the face, say, look, I can't cope with this relationship anymore. You're treating me so badly. I'm going to have to step away from you if you don't do, you know, you need to respect my boundaries. You need to treat me better. Don't speak to me like that. Don't do that with my children.
Yeah.
Listen to me. And constantly we're met with a brick wall, only to eventually say, right, that's it, I am done.
Yeah.
To then have a follow-up with, well, why did you never tell me what was wrong? And it is, without a shadow of a doubt, one of the most common things that I hear. There isn't a right way to cut contact.
No.
There isn't a right way to navigate any of this, because none of it's right. You know, parents are supposed to love and care for their children and unconditionally and be there for them and support them. You make a conscious choice to have a child and to do what is best for that child and to keep that child. So if that is the choice that you have made, then that's for life. That's something that you have to do. And unfortunately, that means there will be times when you have to have those uncomfortable conversations where your child will come to you and say, you did this and this upset me. And we talked about this a little bit before we came on air, how I've had to have these conversations with my teenager who said, well, you did this, mum, and it's really upset me. It's horrible when you realise that your behaviour has potentially been unacceptable. I have to take accountability for it.
Yeah.
Everything in your body pushes back against it, especially when you have grown up in a toxic environment where you were taught the parent is always right. It's really difficult to be accountable sometimes, to hold your hands up and say, I'm really sorry I did that. That's on me. And to have that vulnerability in admitting and acknowledging your mistakes and then changing your behavior and doing better. But that's what we do as parents, because that's what matters to our children. I have never worked with anyone or spoken to anyone who had their parent at any stage taken full accountability for what they'd done, the way they'd behaved, the way they treated them, the way their childhood had panned out, and then changed their current behavior, as well as working towards rebuilding the foundations, getting into therapy themselves, unlearning their own toxic behaviors. I've never spoken to anyone who's like, yeah, no, I'd have still cut contact. Everybody that I've spoken to has always said, well, if they could have done that, I might have needed some distance. But actually, that would have made all the difference. That's all I ever asked for. That's all I wanted. So there isn't a right way to cut contact. What I say to people who are considering cutting contact is to write a letter, outline everything that has ever upset you, everything that has hurt you, all of the things that have happened in your past, and then keep that for you. You can burn it, destroy it in some way. Get that out of you so it's not sat there festering. And then if you want to, you can send a message or a letter to your parents. I usually say as an email, as opposed to having a face-to-face conversation, that just says, I don't feel that this relationship is in my best interests and I'm going to be asking for no contact from you. I will no longer be replying to any messages, and then block and remove.
Yeah.
And the reason that I say to do that way, and again, if you choose not to let them know and you choose to just stop replying to messages to step back, that's completely up to you. That's fine. If you've been setting boundary after boundary after boundary and you've been saying, hey, look, if you treat me this way, I am no longer going to be coming round.
Yeah.
And you just choose to silently follow through on that,
You do you. That's fine. You've given ample warning there in saying, don't speak to me that way. Please, can you do this? Look, this hurts me when you do this. The warning flags have been there for probably most of your life. And if you get to a point where you don't feel it's necessary to communicate that you no longer want contact, that's fine. But if you do want to, the reason that I say in to have that letter where you outline everything, where you express everything, and then just a very simple, not explaining anything, not going into great detail, is because who is that detail serving and what are you looking to get from that? Because if you do give all those reasons and you do give all those explanations of I'm cutting contact because of this, 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 and this, what are you going to get from that other than more invalidation and more denial and more you did this, more role reversals of I'm the victim, you're being so mean to me? Nothing. You don't get anything. So unless you feel that's beneficial, withdraw yourself and protect your peace.
I tried. He said he wanted to repair the relationship and move forward more positively. And I thought, William, so do I. That's always what I've wanted. You know, it was like the words I've always wanted to hear. And I was so excited. And I wrote back and I was like, okay, but this is a two-way street. Like, we've all got to be in this together. Like it's not just I have to be more in contact, because again, like I was saying to you before we came on air, you know, one of the joys of having ADHD, I say joys, not really at all, is if it's not in front of you and you don't see it, you don't remember it. And that is the same with relationships as well. Like, it's very easy to accidentally go without contact for months and months and months with someone because, like, you literally need to be in their presence to remember to do the things. And sometimes it can be really difficult. And so, actually, like, if he wants to have contact, he has to be just as in my face as my mum is. Do you know what I mean? Like, my mum will text me every day. How you doing, dear? Good morning. Everything all right? Did the kids sleep okay? Are you feeling okay? You know, at least once a week she'll message me, do you have time for a cup of tea? And it's like, sure. My mum lives half an hour away, over that, in fact. So it will not be a face-to-face cup of tea. It will be a FaceTime cup of tea. But she makes that effort because she knows that I'm busy and she knows that I will forget.
And I bet if you turned around and said, no, Mum, I don't, there would be no guilt tripping. There'd be no nastiness. There'd be no anger. It would just be, cool, I was just checking in to see if you did. If you don't, you live your life and that's great. I want to be there for you, not I'm entitled to you.
Yes, which is very much the way he is. So I thought, oh, fab, you know, so I set out these clear parameters. It's two-way street. You've got to be as on it as me. Like, it can't be like, you know, you send a message at birthdays and expect a reply. You've got to like text and say, how are you doing, everything all right? You've got to ring. You know, you have to make an effort. And then also but then he came back with something quite snarky and I was like, oh
yeah,
okay, this isn't gonna work out. And then he and then in the end I was just like, so I essentially wrote a very, 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 very small, minor, manageable portion of said letter. And then did something very stupid with it. I texted it to him.
Okay.
And that came back in my face big time. All of a sudden, he was throwing my faith in my face. So out of my family members, I am the only Christian. Okay. My mum's an atheist. My sister thinks there could be something out there. But I would say, actually, my mum's turned a bit more agnostic recently. There's something possibly out there, but, you know, it's not what I believe, which is fine. Same with my sister. as far as she's concerned, it could be Clifford the Big Red Dog who is God, and you know, we just happen to be pawns in his game, which is cool, you know, again, like if that's what she wants to believe, that's fine with me. But we're all very like, I'm not a Bible basher by any means. I don't throw things in people's faces and say, oh, you can't possibly do that and go out drinking on a Friday night. Oh no, that's a bad, no, because I do. I'm a normal human being. I just so happen to believe that there is a God.
Yeah. Yeah.
And go to church. But my dad, he has such a horrible relationship when it comes to Christianity, especially. If I turned around and told him I wanted to shave my head, move to Tibet and become a Buddhist monk, he'd be fully on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
But because I went down the path of Christianity, I'm a Bible bashing sanctimonious snob, apparently.
Right.
And I was like, I'm the least of, I'm like so far removed from any of those things. When I sent the message to my sister, she just wrote back, what?
Yeah.
And so it was like, right, okay, you know, this isn't right. And so I still have like bits of the letter that I should write. Physically write stuck in my head, and I think, oh, it's going to do me so good to actually write it down. But you know, even to myself, it's like, oh, we've got to find the time to do it. If it's really important, I know I will make the time to do it. I'm just still not willing to let go of it yet, you know. I
and
think
for some people, it's if writing it is not for you, sometimes it can be speaking it and saying it and getting that. It's a way of physically getting that out of you. That is an exercise that can be quite powerful. But interestingly, with your dad and attacking you about your religion, if it wasn't attacking you about the religion, it would be attacking you about something else, if that's the kind of person that he is. And there's an acronym that is used to describe the behaviours of usually narcissistic parents, or some people would prefer to refer to them as emotionally mature parents. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
But a narcissistic parent will do something that we'd call DAVO, which is defensive, attacking, reverse victim offender roles. So initially it would be very defensive of, I don't do that, I never behave that way, you're being so mean to me. And then it's the attack, and then it's reversing the victim offender roles of, now you're bullying me, you're being unkind to me, you're abusing. What I hear a lot with people who have just got to that point where they are cutting contact is this real playing the victim of, well, my child is refusing to get in contact with me. Not, what have I done to cause this? But just they're withholding it, and that's abuse itself. No, it's not. Not having contact with someone. No one's entitled to you because they're titled to you. So not having contact with someone and just saying, I don't want a relationship with you, is actually quite the opposite of abuse. It is quite firm, quite simple. I don't want to have contact with you. The only way in which we owe a relationship to someone is if we are their parent. And then yes, you do owe your child a relationship because you chose to have them.
It's crazy, isn't it? Like, I know I don't owe him anything. And like, I know that I am owed a lot. Like, I have like zero answers to so many things about like why he chose to not see us every weekend, and why, you know, all these questions I have. But I've just got to come to the realization that I'm not going to get those answers, because if I ask those questions, he's just going to fly off on the defensive, and that's just the way he is, because he has zero ability to self-reflect.
Yeah.
He has zero ability to look in the mirror and say, yeah, no, I shouldn't have done that. You know, whereas I will sit there and pick myself apart. You know, I can sit there and go, well, I shouldn't have shouted. I shouldn't have done this. You know, oh, and feel such guilt and shame about all of this stuff. It wasn't until I started therapy again a while ago that I realized that it was pointed out to me that were the feelings I was feeling guilt, or were the feelings I was feeling shame?
Yeah, people use like, them interchangeably, but actually they're very different feelings.
Oh yeah, and like even like stupid little things like being 15 minutes late to meet a friend for coffee or something. I feel such, I would always, oh, I feel so guilty I was late. No, I felt shame that I got sidetracked by, you know, sending an email or doing something that I, it was this last minute task I had to get done and I must complete it before I was allowed to go out and have some fun. That I was then like, oh, you know, well, first of all, that was stupid. And, you know, I didn't have to do that thing to go out and have a coffee. And second of all, you know, like if they love me and they want to be my friend, they already know I'm going to be late.
Yeah.
You know, especially usually the friend that I was late for, being friends since we were 11, she knows. She's fully aware. So yeah. I'd always be like, oh, no, I'm so sorry, I'm so late. Blah, blah, blah. She'd be like,
I bought a book.
Yeah, I got you some tea. I got you a slice of cake. Mm-hmm. Sit down. And it was always the one I wanted. You know, she knows.
Yeah.
the last question we have is, okay, how do you respond when people say you might change your mind about estrangement?
You don't have to respond at all. Don't have to respond at all. You can respond with a simple fuck off, but it generally is not particularly helpful. If you're wanting to be a little bit more diplomatic than that, then I think that one of the easiest ways to respond to that is to say, I might, but at this moment in time, I need to protect myself from that relationship. And that's it. That's the end of it. The ball is in the court of the parent on that one. If they want to change their behaviour, they want to be accountable and they want to work on themselves and the relationship, then hey, perhaps there might be a change in that. Perhaps not, and that's also okay. I've had people before who have said to me, at this point, we've got to a stage in the relationship where if they did want to work on themselves and they came to me and said, hey, look, I'm in therapy, even now, it wouldn't interest me because I wouldn't trust it. And that's okay. You get to choose who is in your life. And that's another thing that you can say in response to that is, actually, I get to choose who's in my life and I don't appreciate your input. And you're allowed to say that to people. You don't have to justify or make excuses for or set a time limit on how long you're not going to have someone in your life for, because again, no one is entitled to you because they are titled to you, whether they have the title of mother, grandmother, father, grandfather, aunt, uncle. No one has an automatic right to just be in your life. If they can't treat you properly, they can't respect your boundaries, and they can't respect you, then no, they don't have a place in your life, and that's okay. So in response to people saying things like, oh, but it's your mum, or, oh, you might change your mind when they get older, oh, you might regret it when they get older, it's okay to sort of shrug that off and say, well, actually, at this moment in time, this relationship doesn't serve me, and that's okay. And I'm not available for further discussion on the matter.
No one other than you needs to know, you know, your choices. You make your choices for your own valid reasons, and no one deserves an explanation for your relationship with someone else. Like, I mean, it's yeah, I agree.
Can you imagine if it was fuck off? What? And can you imagine if somebody got divorced and we were like, oh, you might change your mind. You just wouldn't. You just wouldn't. So why do we do it with a parental relationship? I will never understand. I mean, I do understand it. I've trained to understand it.
Yeah.
But equally, it's a really frustrating societal thing that when there is a blood tie involved, people will roll out all sorts of things such as blood is thicker than water, you know, without realizing that that's only half of the saying. And actually what the saying means is you get to choose your own family. And that sometimes the blood relatives that we have are shitty ones and we don't have to continue to have them.
Yeah.
And it's what suits the narrative of the time and what suits people's agendas. For some people, you might find they're really understanding, and for other people, they might feel that that's really confronting for them. They might feel that they want to make excuses for your parent. They might have never experienced a toxic parent and can't possibly imagine what it would be like to have no contact. So how could you cut contact with a parent? And that's all okay, because that's all a them problem. And all you have to say and know is that you've made the choice that is right for you, and simply follow it up with, you could be correct, but at this moment in time, this relationship is not right for me, and I'm not available to discuss it further, or I'm not willing to discuss it further. And that's setting a boundary.
One thing I found difficult was my husband is Turkish Cypriot, so family is like huge. But my mother-in-law came from a really toxic family dynamic. Like, she doesn't have any contact with her dad. It was bad. He has his whole new family and everything anyway. Some of the stuff she went through as a kid was awful. Mm. And yet she would still say to me, but he's your dad. And she would still say to me, you know, I think you should invite him to the wedding and things. And I did. Yeah. And I really wish I had been brave enough to just say no and not do it, because that was what was expected of me. But my mum had to sit there in this awfully uncomfortable, environment. And not just that, my sister, me, it was so uncomfortable. They can't be in the same room together. My mum's done it though for me before, when I passed my A-levels, we all went out for dinner together. I honestly don't know how she did it. I can't believe she did that for me. She put those things aside and she sat there at a table with him. And she was just like, instead of saying to me, please don't do it, she allowed it to happen because she thought that was what I wanted. And I mean, I can't even start to put myself in her shoes I can, because I'm a mum myself and I would do anything for my kids, and that's exactly the relationship you want, isn't it? A parent who would do anything for you, and that's what she's done. But I really wish I'd have been as brave as my sister and just said, no, that's not happening. He's not coming. Our relationship with him, we've both chosen we both went low contact, we're both thinking about no contact. But even though our experiences were very different, we've both come to the same decisions, and so it I think says a lot about him, doesn't it? If we both decided to come to this decision, our experiences were very different.
But I'd also say actually that says quite a lot about your mum as well. Yeah. In that she's empowered both of you to recognize, because what we often see within toxic family dynamics, especially when the parents stay together and one of them is particularly toxic, the other one becomes somewhat of an enabler. And the whole family buys into this narrative that one person is the scapegoat and one person is the problem. So you end up with people who will cut contact or try to set boundaries at minimum with that one toxic person, and everyone else, siblings, other parent around them, try and push them into having that relationship, try and push them into, oh, but it's your dad, or oh, but it's your mum. And there isn't any of that support there. So I would say, actually, that says a lot about him, but it also says a lot about the way in which your mum has empowered you to have those boundaries and to say, nope, neither of us are going to tolerate this, and we'll recognise the behaviour for what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think, a lot of that comes from her own experiences with her own mum and making those decisions for herself. A lot of it comes from being a therapist and having also dealt with other people who have gone through similar situations. But equally, a lot of it is just being a mum.
Yeah.
Just being a mum, just wanting to protect your kids. She did, the every other weekend visits were mandatory court, put in place things. And, if she'd have gone against it and said, no, I'm not dropping my kids off there, which, she could have done. You know, I think she was worried about there being some sort of backlash, but equally, he made a decision. He could have seen us more. He could have had us overnight on the weekends, and he chose that. He set that boundary that we would only see each other every other weekend on a Saturday, and that was it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but again, she wanted us to be able to make our own decisions and our own choices, and she refused to even tell me anything about the divorce until I was in my 30s. You know, I'm not going to tell you anything until you're 30. That's what she said. And yeah. I respected that boundary, and I would only ever ask her anything if I was really, if it was really desperate and I was really upset about something. Other than that, I would respect that boundary as firmly as I could, because, you know, she didn't want to relive it, but equally she wanted to allow us to have that relationship if we wanted.
Yeah.
And she also wanted to allow us to make our own decisions. Whether we wanted to continue that relationship or not. And wow, like, you know, I think that's what a parent should be.
Yeah,
that's exactly it. But anyway, thank you so much for joining me today, and thank you so much for, you know, answering, you know, those people's questions. I think, you know, it's such a subjective thing going into that sort of decision-making process, and also, you know, working through it, and coming to those choices. They are your choices, they are your experiences, and you owe no one else an explanation. I think that's the sum up we can give.
Exactly that.
But yeah, I would 100%, if you are thinking about setting those boundaries, or you're going through an estrangement yourself, and you're wondering like what the next steps are, 100%, please follow, tune into, listen to Unfollowing Mum, because that Harriet has some amazing guests on, as well as her own experiences. She has amazing guests on who have lived their own experiences, and everyone is so different. But there's always something relatable that you'll be able to pick out of it, and will help you on your journey to estrangement. So yeah, do make sure to follow and listen. I'll make sure that all of the links to Harriet's Instagram accounts and also the podcast are in the show notes as well. So if you've listened to this and you want to quickly hop on over to Instagram or find her on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, do scroll down, have a look in the show notes, and you'll be able to find all the links there. But I feel like that was a therapy session for me as well, so thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And also do make sure to keep an eye out on Harriet's podcast, because my sister and I will be joining her to talk in more detail about our own experiences with our own estrangement process and decision.
Yeah.
As well. So,
well, thank you so much for having me. And I am really excited to chat to you both. I think that'll be such an enlightening episode for people to hear from two siblings who have the experience, but different experiences, because this is what I try to impress upon people. We never have the same lived experiences of our parent, even if it's the same. You know, people say, oh, it's the same parents. No, we never have the same parents. And that's absolutely, whether you have a healthy or a toxic relationship with a parent, that's okay to acknowledge that you have different lived experiences of each individual person, because we all relate to each other differently. So I'm really looking forward to speaking to you both on that.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much. And I will speak to you very soon.
Speak to you soon.
If you enjoyed this episode of Mum's Work and Chaos, please make sure to subscribe on whatever podcasting channel you're listening on at the moment. Or if you'd like to get involved, feel free to email me at mumsworkandchaos@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at Mum's Work and Chaos. See you then.